Well, greetings again, friends and brethren. I hope this finds everyone doing well. If you need a title for this message today, it is Economic Woes. Economic Woes. So if any of you have been keeping your eye on the news lately, or specifically the stock market here in the United States and other places in the world, different stock markets, it's been in a bad situation here over the past month, and specifically in the last 2 weeks. I've been watching it pretty close. Actually, I've been watching it for years and studying it for years, but I am not I'm not an economist, and so what I want to do in this message is just an overview of what's going on in light of what God revealed through his end time apostle, Mr. Hubbard Armstrong, and what God's word says. So I don't want to I would try to refrain from being too technical with it, but I do have some various news items to present to give us a flavor of what's actually going on in the economy and in the news, if you haven't been watching, and what it's going to lead to and why. So with that, if you've been watching the stock market, I speak right here, I'm looking at my television, which is muted, and the stock market's down almost 200 points right off the bat this morning. But it's been doing that up and down for a while. But it's to the point now where many of the, I've been watching almost every day these pundits on the CNBC and Bloomberg television channel, the two main primary financial channels, and watching the commentaries from these financial experts that they call in from all over the place, from Wall Street and different sectors of our society, economists and strategists, investors, and they're all worried. And once in a while, you'll find one that has an attitude of that it's just this has been going on a long time, and everything's fine, and the fundamentals of our economy are sound, and we have nothing to worry about. But the vast majority that I've watched being interviewed in the last 2 weeks, these professionals, they're extremely worried. And they have good cause and good reason to be. So the banks, for example, right now they're all admitting we're in a housing and a credit and banking crunch. So that's three different sectors right there, housing and credit and banking, which are kind of tied. But when I mean credit, I'm referring to lending institutions. And just for information purposes, on the lending institutions, you may not be aware of this. You can look it up on Financial Times. But over the last 3 months, there's roughly 75 major lending institutions that have gone belly up. See, they just closed their doors or gone bankrupt, and so that's one telltale sign right there. Over 70 lending institutions, and there's a reason why that's happening, and it ties into this next figure, which I've seen produced from several different economists here in the last week. Just so far this year, in 2007, from January up until August now, there have been over 950,000 foreclosures on new home mortgages. 950,000 over that, foreclosures on new home mortgages. Well, that's a pretty awesome number. And they're expecting it to go well over a million and a half, maybe 2 million by the end of this year, just up until December 31st. And they're forecasting another 2 million more foreclosures in 08, next year. And the reason why this is because of, you may have heard this term, subprime, the subprime lending problem. And what that is, basically, in a nutshell, is these lending institutions, many of whom are going out of business now. And I've noticed, here's one you may see on TV a lot in commercials. It's the largest one, I think, in the United States. It's countrywide. They're always, these commercials are on almost every day in every channel anymore. But they are very close to going to bankruptcy right now as of this moment. Also because of this subprime lending. And what that amounts to is back beginning around 2003, and primarily 2004 and 2005, when our economy was just on fire still as far as growth, and the construction industry was still in a major boom. I was still working in Florida at the time, matter of fact, in 05 with my brother, and there was quite a bit of construction going on. along the Gulf Coast there, but it's all slowed down now and all but stopped in many areas, not just in Florida, but all around the United States. It's tremendously in dire straits right now. But a lot of this has to go back to that this in the subprime. It's these lenders were are they have lo they loosened their restrictions on lending to where they were letting people with bad little or no credit or bad credit to get these loans for new homes. And it ties into a specific type of loan, which is called an ARM, ARM, which is an adjustable rate mortgage. And I don't want to get too technical here, but just as an overview. And what that adjustable rate mortgage is allowing the borrower, the new homeowner, to get a loan for, say, $100,000, $200,000, or whatever the home loan is, $250,000, with a small interest rate for the first 2 years, like 3 to 3.5 to 4.5%. On the average, it's like 4% for like 2 years. But what the small print indicates in these loans is at the end of 2 years, that interest rate balloons up to upwards of 8%, and so does your monthly payments. So that's one reason why we're having these foreclosures at a record pace this year, is because some of those first ones that were done, these ARMs, ARM, adjustable rate mortgages that were done in 05, 04 and 05 are going into the balloon status now after 2 years, and these 950 plus thousand so far this year can't afford that high interest rate and almost the doubling of their monthly payments. So if you were paying, say, $1,000 or $1,100 a month, which is high enough for a house payment, suddenly it's gone to $2,000 or $2,200. And so that's just absolutely crippling many families out there and homeowners. Excuse me, you have to bear with me. I have to stop every now and then, pause the recording and cough. I contracted a chest cold a week or so ago, and it's gone into my lungs, so I'm having a little trouble speaking. But anyway, that's the overview of what's going on in the lending market, which is one reason why over 70, 75 lending institutions and more are coming have folded up or declared bankruptcy within the last 3 months. So we have over 900, almost quickly approaching 1 million foreclosures so far this year, and another 2 million forecast in next year. And there'll probably be about around 2 million by the end of this year, or close to it. So that has also put a crunch on the banks that back some of the lending institutions. So it's causing a crunch in the banking industry too, what they call the financials in the market. So that's kind of an overview of what's going on there. But the stock market is really like a gambling machine, and it's run by fear or faith. They have faith in the market or they don't have faith in it. If they lose faith in the market, then things drop. Well, things are beginning to come around that have been work in the works for 20 and 30 years that Mr. Armstrong warned about, and it's beginning to come to a head. Now, I don't want to say unequivocally that this is going to be the downturn that's going to lead to our economic collapse. But if not, it certainly is a prelude to it, the beginning of it, because prophecy shows the economy in this country, and indeed many places around the world, the Israelitish nations primarily, it's going to collapse, and it's for a reason. So the stock market, really, as I've said to many brethren over the years, it's just a gambling machine. It's all it is a gamble. It doesn't matter whether you're a day trader or a long-term investor. It's just a gamble. And true Christians really should not be involved in gambling of any type, and that's what the stock market is. And there's just no other way to look at it. It's a gamble. First, I want to read an email that was sent by Mr. Hessong to our brethren last week, but for the benefit of any others that hear this. This is very interesting because this is a statement by David Walker, who's the Comptroller General of the United States, the head of the GAO, the General Accounting Office. So he's like the top accountant for our government. And it's very interesting because it ties into this message today. And the title of it is "Learn from the Fall of Rome, U.S. Warned," by Jeremy Grant in Washington, published August 14th, 07. It says, "The U.S. government is on a burning platform of unsustainable policies and practices with fiscal deficits, chronic health care underfunding, Immigration and overseas military commitments threatening a crisis if action is not taken soon, the country's top government inspector has warned. See, this is from this government official. David Walker, Comptroller General of the United States, issued the unusually downbeat assessment of his country's future in a report that lays out what he called a chilling long-term simulations. These include dramatic tax rises, slashed government services, and the large-scale dumping by foreign governments of U.S. holdings of U.S. debt. Pause from reading. Well, that's been happening pretty steadily over this past week, and it could get worse. China and Japan and Germany, for example, hold a tremendous amount of U.S. debt, and so beginning to dump that. Continue reading. Drawing parallels with the end of the Roman Empire, Mr. Walker, warned there were striking similarities between America's current situation and the factors that brought down Rome, including declining moral values and political civility at home, an overconfident and overextended military in foreign lands, and fiscal irresponsibility by the central government. Sound familiar? Mr. Walker said. In my view, it's time to learn from history and to take steps to ensure the American Republic is the first to stand the test of time. Mr. Walker's views carry weight because he is a nonpartisan figure in charge of the Government Accountability Office, that's GAO, often described as the investigative arm of the U.S. Congress. While most of its studies are commissioned by legislators, about 10%, such as the one containing his latest warnings, are initiated by the Comptroller General himself. In an interview with the Financial Times, Mr. Walker said he had mentioned some of the issues before, but now wanted to turn up the volume. Some of them were too sensitive for others in government to have their names associated with. He says, quote, I'm trying to sound an alarm and issue a wake-up call. He said, as Comptroller General, I've got an ability to look a longer range and take on issues that others may be hesitant, and in many cases may not be in a position to take on. One of the concerns is obviously we are a great country, but we face major sustainability challenges that we are not taking seriously enough, said Mr. Walker, who was appointed during the Clinton administration to the post, which carries a 15-year term. The fiscal imbalance meant the U.S. was on a path toward an explosion of debt. Well, we've got that now, brethren. continue reading. With the looming retirement of baby boomers, spiraling health care costs, plummeting savings rates, and increasing reliance on foreign lenders, we face unprecedented fiscal risk, said Mr. Walker, a former senior executive at PwC auditing firm. Currently, U.S. policy on education, energy, the environment, immigration, and Iraq also was on an unsustainable path. Our very prosperity is placing greater demands. Now listen to this, because we're going to come back to this, but from another source. He says, our very prosperity, see, this is what it's doing. Our very prosperity is placing greater demands on our physical infrastructure. Billions of dollars will be needed to modernize everything from highways and airports to water and sewage systems. The recent bridge collapse in Minneapolis was a sobering wake-up call. Mr. Walker said he would offer to brief the would-be presidential candidates next spring. They need to make fiscal responsibility and intergenerational equity one of their top priorities. If they do, I think we have a chance to turn this around, but if they don't, I think the risk of a serious crisis rises considerably. End of reading, and that's the end of that email. Well, that crisis is at hand, and it's going to come, regardless. Prophecy shows that. So now we're going to get into some things that God revealed through Mr. Armstrong, and that Mr. Armstrong spoke on about this. So this message won't involve a lot of going through your Bible, except maybe towards the end a little bit. So mainly we just need to please listen and listen to what God's apostle wrote about this many years ago. First, I want to go to the autobiography of Mr. Hubert Armstrong, volume 2 of the autobiography. And if you've got it handy, you're certainly welcome to turn there. This is a letter that I have earmarked and highlighted and written notes on for many years, and it's still up to date. in beginning on page 622. This is a co-worker letter from Mr. Armstrong dated January 20th, 1983. Mr. Armstrong says, "Dear brethren and co-workers with Christ," now pay attention to this first paragraph, "I have to tell you now that the outlook for the United States and the entire world is bleak and foreboding indeed. Based on world news, observation, and personal contacts with world leaders, based on Bible prophecy and in a long life of experience, I have to tell you now that the entire world economy is in a drastic nosedive. Civilization itself is stricken with spiritual, moral, and economic sickness, and to its death, the end of this world." Further down, for sake of time, I'm just going to drop down. Got a lot to cover here today in this message, and I'm not sure if I can get it all in one part. But Mr. Armstrong says on the same page, "In November 1919, I was a member of the Chicago Association of Commerce. At a regular weekly membership luncheon, the noted Boston statistician and economist Roger Babson was a guest speaker." Pause from reading. Now remember that name. I know you remember. I remember this from hearing of it years ago. Mr. Armstrong spoke about it. But I'm going to refer you all to a website here shortly that chronicles the crash. This is a smaller crash that came in 1920-21, but there was a large one in 29, which led to the Great Depression. And Mr. Babson was very instrumental in both of those, warning of what's going to happen. And this website that I have, it's not church-related. It's actually written by a retired economist of over 50 years. And I don't have the website handy, but if anybody wants it, just email me and ask me, and I'll email the website to you. It takes some reading because the entire depression and the stock market crash of 29 and what led up to that and the crash itself, step by step, is chronicalized in order. And it's composed from news sources of that time and writers of that time. And so it's all done in a chronological order. In about two-thirds way down into it, he talks about Roger Babson and how all of these so-called experts out there that were showing how good the economy was and that those in a couple of dips in the stock market didn't mean anything. But Roger Babson was showing that there was something deeper wrong and that there was indeed going to be a crash, and shortly after that it did. And so, but before that happened, they looked at him as an idiot. They thought he was just insane. And yet now, and when it was all said and done, they realized he was correct. And so he did that two times. So I'll continue reading with that because Mr. Armstrong met this fellow. Again, I'll read this paragraph again. November 1919, I was a member of the Chicago Association of Commerce. At a regular weekly membership luncheon, the noted Boston statistician and economist Roger Babson was a guest speaker. He astonished major bank officials and industrial leaders, saying that in 1 year, we would experience the most drastic depression our generation had known. Economic executive killed. See, they sure did. That's been chronicled on this other website, too. Mr. Armstrong witnessed that. Continue. We were then in an upward trend of prosperity. See, it was an upward trend at the time, so this guy's forecast seemed insane. Continue reading. A year later, excuse me, Roger Babson again was our guest speaker. He said, "The year has passed, and I am back, and depression is here with me." There was no ridicule or laughter. Mr. Babson told us why he knew and why business and financial executives did not. Here's the answer. He said, Mr. Babson said, "When I want to know what the temperature is in this room is going to be in an hour or two from now, I don't consult the thermometer on the wall. I go to the boiler room and see what is going on down there. I go to the factor that causes the future temperature." Remember this now, brethren, because it's going to tie into this message. He says, "I go to the factor that causes the future temperature. You men were looking at bank clearings, retail sales, wholesale indexes, stock car loadings and trends, the thermometer on the wall." So that was the end of his quote. So Mr. Armstrong says, "But Mr. Babson said he had learned that when 51% or more of the people were righteous in their dealings with one another, prosperity was just ahead. But when 51% or more of the people were unrighteous in their dealings, economic depression was coming. Was Roger Babson right?" See, pause from reading. Well, look today, friends and brethren, at our economy, at our government, at our society. Would you say 51% or more are righteous? Oh, no. Quite the other way around. and is pushing 100% of God's own people and this nation are unrighteous. That's a bold statement, but that's a fact. I'll continue reading. Now, first, before I do continue, so Mr. Babson's theory was to not look at the indicators, but to look at the underlying causes, see, of what led to the depression. That's why he knew it was coming. Well, today, see, what I'm doing is just reiterating what Mr. Armstrong taught and bringing us up to date with what's in the actual news right now. And the system is rotten to the core. It is rotten to the core, and it's evil, and it's going to come down. And there's a specific prophecy that shows that, and we'll touch on that. Actually, I'm just going to stop reading right there with that article for sake of time, but you can look it up yourself to finish reading that particular co-worker letter. It's on page 622 and 623 of volume 2 of Mr. Armstrong's autobiography. So with that, I'll go on to the next item. And I want to read a couple of excerpts from Mr. Armstrong's booklet, 1975 and Prophecy, a booklet that many have ridiculed over the years, and of course many are still ridiculing. I had to deal with two emails this past week, one from a lady and one from a gentleman, and they both were just absolutely convinced that Mr. Armstrong was a false prophet. His prophecies have never come to pass, and they never will come to pass. He's a false prophet. Well, they had to basically tell them to go their own way because they have a completely lack of God's spirit to begin with. It's a different spirit that was being manifested. But my point there is, and I'll say this on the authority of Jesus Christ and His Word, that Mr. Armstrong was not a false prophet. He said many times, Mr. Armstrong did, that he was ahead of his time, and that for some reason, he said many times, God had been holding back world events. Well, now we know, we should know what that reason is. We had to go into a time of testing and final exams to see who was going to hold fast to those truths. So God has held back. Any of these prophecies could have just sprung on the scene in the early to mid-80s, but there had to be that time, that final time of testing. So those prophecies, the reason why I can say on the authority of Jesus Christ that Mr. Armstrong is not a false prophet, it's because what he taught came out of the Word of God, and Jesus Christ inspired that. See, he was an apostle of Jesus Christ. So those prophecies that are based on God's Word will happen. They certainly will. And they're beginning to come to pass now. Some have already happened. Some are in the process of happening. And some will continue to happen as we live through them. And it'll all end with the ushering in of God's kingdom, the return of Jesus Christ. See? So, let me start here with the United States, with the 1975 in Prophecy, the 1956 edition. Just a couple of comments here that I want to touch on, because it does tie in to this message. And so under the subtitle called Our Great National Calamity, see, that's what's coming very rapidly. Fellow Americans and Britons and Australians and Canadians, nations of Israel, and brethren of God. But under the subtitle, Our Great National Calamity, Mr. Armstrong says, yes, wake up, America and Britain. You have grown calloused and indifferent to the world revolution, world wars and cold wars and the threat of hydrogen bomb war. You Americans and British, you smug, proud, stiff-necked, complacent people. You enjoy a prosperity, see, here's the key, you enjoy a prosperity God never lavished on any other people. You heedlessly permit yourselves to become soft and decadent, setting your foolish hearts on a lush push-button prosperity of leisure. You ignore that the entire prophetic third of God's Word warning you of impending disaster and offering you divine protection from it. Will any one of you who now read this warning, and I'll add hear this warning, awaken to the stern reality? God Almighty now reveals in time to prevent it that one-third of all of our people will soon die of starvation and disease, that our day of reckoning is upon us, that we are to be stripped of our wealth and prosperity. See, this is what this message is about today, brethren, our economy. We're going to be stripped of our wealth and prosperity on which we set our hearts, that a second third of our people of your personal friends, relatives, and acquaintances will be killed by the awesome hydrogen bomb invasion that our proud United States and British Commonwealth are now destined to be suddenly crushed in defeat, that the remaining third left alive are to be carried as captives, scattered over the land of our enemies and their allies as abject slaves, and that even millions of them shall be tortured inhumanely in organized religious persecution until their breath expires in martyrdom. So that's a dire warning out of that book. And I'm going to read one more section here under the subtitle, Annihilation of All Life, question mark. He goes on to show that God won't do that. But at the end of this one section, Mr. Armstrong says, man refuses to learn the truth. See, this is what happened with those emails I received this week. These people refuse to learn the truth. He will not listen to God's preaching. He would persist to the bitter end, to the annihilation of all human life, if God did not step in and intervene. There is only one language that rebellious mankind will heed: physical punishment, in being deprived of physical assets. Very few individuals ever came to God through Jesus Christ in unconditional surrender until God had punished them by physical adversity. Neither will our nations, and neither will the world as a whole, come to God in any other way. See, end of reading, other than by physical punishment and having those physical assets removed. On the next page, under the same subtitle, I want to read this next section, and then I think that's going to be it from this booklet. But this ties in also with our these words such as economy and prosperity. It ties into this message and what's going on and what's about to happen. So Mr. Armstrong says, yes, excuse me, paradoxical though it may seem, this terrifying news actually is good news. For this impending punishment is the only way a mankind of free choice can ever be brought to learn the lesson, to acknowledge that God's laws were set in motion for our good, to be brought voluntarily to choose the way of God, which will at last bring an undreamed of utopia. Yes, the kingdom of God is now near at hand. Pause. I'm going to second that because it is very near, friends and brethren. Continue reading. And that is the best news since the first man drew the first breath. There is one reason and one only for the never-equaled national calamity that is destined soon to strike America and Britain. In no other way will mankind ever really learn the lesson he has so tragically written in human blood and suffering. God has decreed that we ourselves must choose whether to accept his divine rule over us with his inexorable laws, or whether to reject God's way and follow the ways and customs that human nature devised and established in this Satan-swayed world. And God will not force humanity to walk his way. Man must first learn his lesson and then make his own right choice. But again, I repeat, it's later than you think. Yes, time is running out on us fast. And we're too sound asleep. Isn't that interesting? We're too sound asleep in deception to realize it. Our peoples will continue only a few more years in comparative economic prosperity. This very prosperity, see, this is our wealth. This very prosperity is our fatal curse. See, that is our curse. This very prosperity is our fatal curse because our people are setting their hearts on it, seeking the ease and leisure, becoming soft and decadent and weak. We're going the way of ancient Rome to a greater fall because we're bigger and more prosperous and have farther to fall. Then suddenly, before we realize it, we'll find ourselves in the throes of famine, uncontrollable epidemics of disease. Already, we're in the beginning of a terrible famine, and we don't know it. A famine of needed minerals and vitamins in our foods. Our peoples have ignored God's agricultural laws. Not all of the land has been permitted to rest every seventh year. The land has been overworked. Today, the soil is worn out, and food factories, in the interest of larger profits, are removing much of what minerals and vitamins remain, while a new profit-making vitamin industry deludes the people into believing they can obtain these precious elements from pills and capsules purchased in drugstores and health food stores. And all this state of affairs because man is in defiance of his maker. Along with the coming famine and disease epidemic will come an invasion of billions of crop-destroying bugs, insects, and locusts, grasshoppers on a scale never before to devastate a land. You will read of this in the first chapter of Joel. Well, I'll break from reading there. That'll be the end of reading from this booklet. But that ties into this message today because something I'm going to touch on shortly has to do with agriculture, which is something that's been overlooked and not being talked about in the news, in the dire condition of it. And soon, this country is going to be hurting for food and for water. So look at the weather again. Take us back momentarily to the weather of the severe drought that we're in the southeastern United States and parts of the north, many parts of the west and southwest, and then Texas and Oklahoma, parts of Missouri and Kansas are being continually flooded. So what is this going to do for our agriculture over the next year? See, it won't. We don't have the large reserves we had back in the 1960s that we shipped out continually to the world. We're still shipping out to the world, but it's as it's being harvested. So we don't have those backup reserves. I read somewhere that recently that our we used to have 6 months to a year reserves, and now it's like 30 days. So it's not a good sign what's going on. I want to read now again. I did cover parts of this recently in another message, but I want to cover other parts of the same section because of emphasis on certain statements. But I want to read again from the United States and Britain and Prophecy. And I'm going to begin on page 168 because it ties in to the answer to the problems we're facing today and that we're about to face when this economy goes belly up. And it's, the signs are there. It's been in the works for a long time. Mr. Armstrong saw it, and again, for some reason that he wasn't aware of, or maybe he was, that God held up those events. But in the meantime, that rottenness has been festering. It hadn't gone away. It's still there. So the economy is actually much bigger than it was in those days when Mr. Armstrong was alive. But yet, it's the evil part and the disease is still there. See that? I want to read now from beginning of page 168, the U.S. and Britain prophecy, what's prophesied to happen now to America and Britain. Mr. Armstrong says, just as God has bestowed on us such material blessings, so here we go, see, material blessings, think about that, because it ties in with this economy today. Material blessings as never before came to any nations. Now to correct us so we may enjoy such blessings, he is going to bring upon our peoples such national disaster as has never before struck any nation. Many prophecies describe this. I want to point out one statement here on this page, 168. It's under the subtitle, The Tremendous Prophecy of Micah. He's showing the prophecy in Micah chapter 5, verses 7 through 15, but under his little subtitle here it says, notice, and the remnant of Jacob shall be in the midst of many peoples or nations as a dew from the Lord and as showers upon the grass that it tarrieth not for man nor waits for the sons of men. Verse 7. Mr. Armstrong says, remember that dew and showers are absolutely necessary to agricultural productivity and are a symbol of national blessing and wealth from God. Think about that. Remember that dew and showers are absolutely necessary to agricultural productivity and are a symbol of national blessing and wealth from God. Well, isn't that interesting? So what do we see today? See, we see drought, and it's getting worse. And in some areas, too much rain. So you get too much rain, and you can't grow crops either. Okay, on page 169, Mr. Armstrong says, again, this symbolism describes the last generation of Israel as a great power, as a lion among other nations of the earth. Thine hand shall be lifted up upon thy adversaries, and all thy enemies shall be cut off. They were cut off in the beginning of God's birthright blessing on America and Britain, starting about 1803 through the First World War and the Second World War, until the turning point of the Korean War at the end of 1950. See, that's good to remember because we haven't won a war since then. Since that time, however, Mr. Armstrong says, since that time, however, these blessings are surely being taken away, and neither America or Britain has come out on top in any major skirmish since that time. So this prophecy shows that at the very time we were receiving God's blessings, we were a tremendous blessing to the other nations of the earth, For it is our peoples who have rescued other nations of the world time and time again through the Marshall Plan, and he shows these other plans that we've done, the Hoover Program. So, excuse me, but then for sake of time, he skipped down and he goes to that subtitle, which I've read before, under sudden destruction, because it's going to come suddenly when that destruction comes. Okay, now I want to skip over to page 175 for sake of time. And this is just because what this all is leading to is the prophesied Great Tribulation, friends and brethren. So we want to understand clearly what that is and why. So on page 175, under the subtitle, What is the Great Tribulation? Mr. Armstrong says, now it becomes painfully clear, the Great Tribulation is this sevenfold intensity of corrective punishment which God is now soon going to lay on Britain and America. See? That's the end of reading from there. But I wanted to bring that point out. That's what it is. See, and it's God is allowing it to happen. It's a time of Satan's wrath, but it's God that's allowing it to happen. Now, skipping over to page 183, I'm just bringing these points out because they tie in to this whole message. On page 183, there's one statement here. Mr. Armstrong says, under the subtitle, You Can Escape This Punishment, he says, the sevenfold intensity of punishment now to soon to come upon the American and British peoples is simply the prophesied Great Tribulation. It will be the most frightfully intense punishment in time of trouble ever suffered by any people. Then he goes on to say, you need not suffer it and show the way of escape. So that's the end of reading from there. No, actually, there's one more because this one's very positive and shows what it's all leading to. Turn back to page 164. This is important here, just a short paragraph or so. And it's under the subtitle on page 164, Punishment is Correction. See, that's what this is all about. This is why this economy is going to collapse very soon. And again, I want to emphasize, I don't know that this downturn we see now is the beginning of it, but it certainly could be, and the indications are there. And personally, I believe it is the time because it's been being held back and propped up artificially for so long, all those false structures are beginning to crumble and collapse. But anyway, on page 164, Mr. Armstrong says, punishment is correction. The prophecies do not stop with the revealing, excuse me, revealing the unprecedented multiplied intensity of punishment already beginning to descend upon America and Britain. See, they were already beginning whenever he wrote this, but now it's getting worse. The prophecies record also the result of that intensified punishment. The result will be a corrected people. See, that's the result, a corrected people. The result will be an eye-opening realization of what we have done to ourselves. The supreme punishment will teach us, at last, our lesson. The punishment will break our spirit of rebellion. See, that's what it's for. That's the correction's for. It will lift us up from the cesspool of rottenness and evil into which we have sunk. It will teach us the way to glorious peace, prosperity. See, there's that prosperity again, the right kind of prosperity. Abundant well-being. On beyond the frightful national calamities now descending upon us will come a blessing inconceivably greater than the national material birthright we have possessed. Isn't that awesome? See, that's good news. We have to learn, though, that material goods are not the source of happiness. They are not. I have often mentioned the many rich men I have known, men whose bank balances were full, but their lives were empty. Material prosperity is indeed desirable, but it is not the source of true happiness. So, pause from reading from there. And that concludes from United States and Britain in Prophecy. So, I want to read now from the old Lesson 7 of the Correspondence Course, the 1965 edition, Lesson 7. And there's just a couple of little comments here I want to read about. because it's very interesting, Mr. Armstrong says at the beginning here, what is wrong with this world's, it's the end of the first paragraph, he goes, what's wrong with this world's economy? And he shows the next subtitle is Ending Your Financial Troubles, and then this one is under, the subtitle here I want to read from is called Stupendous Debt. Listen to this. Mr. Armstrong says, now this is when 1965, So I'm going to update it. When I read this paragraph, I'm going to show you the latest figures. In 1965, he says here, America alone owes over $1.1 trillion, $1.1 trillion in public debt, public and private debt. That means that every individual averages a public and private debt of over $6,000, see, each individual. That's about $24,000 debt for a family of four. This debt has piled up because of preparation for war. War is a curse. Pause from reading. So now I want to update that, because first he says that America's national private and public debt was $1.1 trillion, and that each individual part would be $6,000. Well, if you can look on the national debt website, and I've seen it many times. In fact, Mr. Leary emailed it to us here a while back, to many of us. That national debt is now just a little shy of $9 trillion. See, in 1965, when this was written, it was $1.1 trillion. So now it's almost $9 trillion, and instead of a individual debt of $6,000, it is each. In other words, what they do is divide this debt by each person in the United States. We're over 302 million now. So now each person, instead of $6,000, owes between $29 and $30 million. Now, brethren, that's an astronomical jump. Each person's share of the national debt, this has nothing to do with your private debt here now, we all have that too, is between $29 and $30 million. See? Isn't that awesome? And on a daily average, our national debt right now today increases by $1.5 billion per day. Per day. It's just astronomical. I'm going to read on here a little bit more after this paragraph. Mr. Armstrong says, or it's written in this anyway, in this Lesson 7, it says, something must be wrong. We have lost all sense of the value of money. And no wonder. What most people simply don't know today about their financial problems is that the eternal Creator set definite laws in motion, invisible yet inexorable laws, which regulate personal economic conditions. A knowledge of these laws would teach us to recognize the right value of money, would give us joy and happiness by keeping us from lifelong financial slavery. A recent poll of thousands of Americans revealed that not more than 3%, this is in 65 now, or 60, yeah, 65, a recent poll of thousands of Americans revealed that not more than 3% of the people ever heard about these divinely established financial laws, and not even 1% of the people follow these laws that regulate our prosperity. Interesting. Pause from reading there, and I'm going to turn back to page 13 and read one little paragraph here. Excuse me. And Mr. Armstrong, well, I'm not sure if it's Mr. Armstrong that wrote this, but it was written in here in 1965. It says, soon, as we have just seen in previous lessons, the United States, Britain, and other descendants of ancient Israel are to be in national captivity just prior to Christ's coming. Why? Malachi 3 gives the answer to this prophecy. It can be for no other time. Look at the date. It can be for no other people than modern-day Israel, for God addresses it to the people living in the day of Christ's second coming. Verse 2, always Israel has erred. Verse 7, God says to those in our land today, you, if you are guilty, you are cursed with a curse. You have robbed me, even this whole nation, in tithes and offerings. So I pause from there, because that's true. This whole nation, but also the spiritual nation, see? And I made that clear in other messages. The spiritual nation has been robbing God of his tithes because they're throwing it away on futile work. That's not even the work of God. Continue reading. What do you think God will do? Something different than he has always done for disobedience? No. Listen. Joel 1 says he will weaken us with famine. Then Ezekiel 5, verse 5 and 12 shows he will raise a foe against us who will remove us from our land. The English-speaking world hasn't paid God his rent, so our people will be removed from our lands. But you individually can't escape if you begin to obey God's commands and believe what he has promised. So that's end of reading from that lesson. And I want to go to, finally on these, lesson 54. From 1969. These are the old correspondence courses. Lesson 54 from 1969. And just point out a couple of statements, because they do tie in with this message and what's about to happen. And it's in the news right now. the beginning of this, it says here, nothing intrigues the average person more than money, something most have too little of, or so they think. People love money, crave money, even worship money. Millions have made the acquisition of money their goal in life, assuming it will result in true happiness. This lesson exposes the folly of such reasoning and shows why millions in the affluent Western world suffer from serious money problems. And so the subtitles here is why millions are in debt. This ties into the news today. High taxes, runaway inflation, and surging debt rob millions of peace of mind, create worry and financial anxiety, but it is also needless. This first of a three-part series reveals the often overlooked and little understood facts about finances, explaining why millions are in financial debt today. Charge it has become the favorite phrase of millions in the Western world. Today's glittering world of luxury is available on credit and available immediately. Whatever you desire can be yours right now. If you are the average American, Briton, or Australian, the chances are you are head over heels in debt. You are making payments on your home, your furniture, automobile, your household, appliances, maybe even your clothing. But is it worth the price? The next subtitle, false prosperity. See, false prosperity. Never has there been a richer or more affluent society than in the Western nations today, and yet never has there been a time when more people felt afflicted by the lack of the misuse of money. Today's generation, unlike past generations, has not been brought up on the axiom that debt is a danger. See, debt is a danger, and that to be in debt carries somewhat of a stigma. In times past, the concept was that you saved your money until you could pay cash for what you bought. But in today's society, the underlying concept is that you should enjoy today what you hope for, what you hope to pay for tomorrow. That is, if you are still employed and able to pay tomorrow. While millions are heedlessly plunging deeper and deeper into debt, tens of thousands are already hopelessly in debt. I'll add to that today, brethren, millions and millions. They have over-obligated their incomes. They simply can't meet the payments anymore. Okay, the next page, the subtitle is The Curse of the High Taxes. Just a couple of short statements here. Here he says, the governing bodies are diligently seeking new forms of taxation, while you, the average citizen, must already work from 3 to 5 hours out of eight each day just to pay the taxes, many of which are hidden. Why so much personal debt? Why do governments often operate in the red? Why sky-high taxes? Is there a solution? Is there an answer? Well, next subtitle is Gone the Way of Rome. But in between that, there's a photo caption. And this is just a print from it, so I don't actually have the photo. But I like what the photo caption says. It says, listen to this, new $1 bills being printed by the United States Treasury Department. It's probably a photo of the printing machines or the money printing machines. New $1 bills being printed by the United States Treasury Department. Many seem to think that printing more money is the solution to national fiscal ills. See, that's what the Fed does today, brother. But without gold backing, what will happen to faith in the American money when the economy falters? See, well, we haven't had a gold standard since, I think it's 1931, somewhere along in there. One thing I wanted to inject at the beginning of this message, which I failed to do, one of the things I've been watching since the beginning of last week is what they call liquidity injections that have been going on. And what that basically means is that it actually began with the European Union a week or so ago. They actually began by putting in some $80 billion. No, it was actually 130 billion, 90 billion euros or 130 billion U.S. dollars into the stock market to help prop it up. The very next day, the United States followed with liquidity injections, they call it, propping up these loans that are collapsing. And it's just a promissory loan is what it is. And then these happen during the course of the night. While our markets are closed and other markets are running, so these liquidity injections, at least from our government standpoint, happened in the course of each night. This has been going on almost every night now. As of this morning, they put in another $7 billion. They've been putting in anywhere between 5, 10, 15, 20, 30 billion a day consecutively for about 8 or 10 days now. Well, what does that tell people? See, that's causing people to lose faith in the stock market, because if they're having to put this liquidity injections, which basically means money, cash flow is what it means, simple terms, cash flow. There's no cash in the system. It's all numbers, but there's not enough hard cash to support it. So the government's putting in these liquidity injections, which basically is a promise to cover it, because they still don't have it. And so I've been watching this every day. So pay attention when you hear about liquidity injections. That's just it's like putting a band-aid on a huge gash, a big, huge gash that's almost severed your arm off, and it's just dangling there by a piece of flesh, and you're trying to fix it with a band-aid. See, that's basically what it amounts to. So anyway, I'll continue this next subtitle, because it does tie in with that email that Mr. Hesong sent and that warning from our Comptroller of the GAO, and it says here, gone the way of Rome. We are living in days like those of ancient Rome. During those days, just before the fall, the typical free-born Roman was heavily in debt and on the brink of bankruptcy. Living beyond one's means was the mania of the age. As moral fiber broke down, pause from reading. Do we see moral fiber breaking down today? See, brethren, this system is not. That it's rotten to the core. It's not just a financial system. It has to do with our way of life, see? Our spiritual values and our values of human life and how we deal with one another. So it all ties together. Anyway, continue reading. As moral fiber broke down, more and more was demanded of the government. See, pause from reading again. So today we see that happening. Every time something happens, they demand the government to bail them out. It's not always the government's fault. See, we have individual responsibility. We also have a thing called corporate responsibility. These CEOs of these large corporations, and they get these $300 million a year bonuses. But the corporate responsibility and government and individuals has faltered. It has faltered and is beginning to take its toll. So again, I'll continue. As it says, as moral fiber broke down, more and more was demanded of the government. So the government, in return, not only exacted a tremendous toll in taxation, but frequently resorted to outright confiscation of property. Confiscation of property. Defense spending in ancient Rome necessitated enormous taxes. Inflation skyrocketed. Excuse me, please. The coinage was deliberately debased with substitutes for gold and silver. Well, we've seen that happen in the last 70, 80 years, which became increasingly rare. Sound familiar? It should. Since then, nations having tried everything except the answer. Listen to this. Simply printing a wealth of paper money has seemed an easy solution to many governments. But increasing the money supply without adding value back to it only spurs creeping inflation. Creeping inflation to a gallop, with the result that everyone pays more to get less. The fact is that all new ideas of modern gadgetry only make bad matters worse. They simply do not resolve money problems, but only postpone and redouble them. They do not attack the basic causes of national fiscal ills. Neither do the ways most individuals try to solve their financial woes. See, the same boat. It's time we face the financial facts of life. If we would get back to the basic laws governing finances, we would finally understand that nations and individuals can have sound financial systems only when they do not spend more than their incomes. But most people have ignored these simple laws. Indeed, most people would be shocked to realize that spiritual laws exist which regulate fiscal affairs. Yet these living, inexorable principles would teach us to recognize the right value of money. They would keep us out of debt, would give us lifelong financial security. Most people would laugh if anyone would suggest searching the scriptures to learn how to be a success at handling money. But there is no facet of life that the Bible does not touch upon and reveal in principle how to live. Personal finances certainly are included. Let's begin to understand these overlooked and little understood financial principles. But first, let's understand exactly why the Israelitish nations possessed unparalleled material blessings today and why they are about to lose them. Pause from reading, because he does go on to describe that and describes, of course, the tithing laws and all that. And so I want to skip over to page 10. It looks like I might be going overtime of my 1 hour limit on this, so I won't be able to put this message on the little player on the website. I'll just have to put it where individuals can download it to hear it. It's unfortunate, but there's probably not enough material to go two full messages, so I'll just go as long as it takes with this one. We'll see. I do want to skip over to page 10, though, at this point, because in the conclusion of this lesson 54, it's interesting what is stated here under the subtitle, Why Laodiceans Are Lukewarm. And this is interesting. It says, the attitude of the typical Laodicean will be a byproduct of modern Western luxury and affluence compared to the average person of the rest of the world and of the past ages. The poorest man, especially in the United States, is really wealthy. Modern affluence and ease will, to a great extent, be responsible for the soon coming era of lukewarm spiritual zeal. The Laodiceans will be overly concerned with material prosperity. End of reading. And that is indeed the case today. And of course, they also think that they're spiritually rich and in need of nothing as well, but also physically. So I want to read now what time I've got here. The Mystery of the Ages, pages 155. Some interesting statements here. Page 155 for Mystery of the Ages. Because this begins to show why we were ever given these material blessings to begin with. And most Americans, and most professing Christians, and many even of God's own people that knew this have forgotten it because they think their wealth has come from their own hand or their own knowledge. But on page 155, beginning in the bottom paragraph, Mr. Armstrong says, after the flood, profane history, see, not true history, but profane history implies that Shem continued more or less in the knowledge and way of God. But, Mr. Armstrong says, no man really walked with God until Abraham. It was to Abraham God made all the promises on which ultimate human salvation depends, as well as the material and economic prosperity that has come to the United States and British. So there's why we have reaped so many benefits, because of Abraham's faithfulness and obedience. And that's the only reason why we've reaped these blessings in this country to be so great economically and our wonderful prosperity. But as Mr. Armstrong shows, and as God's Word shows, that at the very time that we reach the zenith, it's going to be taken away. See, suddenly. Okay, quickly here, just in case I can finish, on page 191 of Mystery of the Ages, at the top of the page, Mr. Armstrong says, after the year 1800, we prospered because of Abraham's obedience and God's unbreakable promises to him. But now, having received such individual and national prosperity, we sin by stealing from God. That has brought our nations under a curse. We have won our last war. Nothing but troubles now lie ahead until we repent. So, very quickly now to page 312, 312, the bottom paragraph. It says, because this is leading to good news, it says, see now a glimpse into a world of no illiteracy, no poverty, no famine, no starvation, into a world where crime decreases rapidly, people learn honesty, chastity, human kindness, and happiness, a world of peace, prosperity, see, and abundant well-being. So he goes on and shows these other subtitles that's going to happen in the world tomorrow, the solving of these problems. A population explosion is solved. Pure water, fertile deserts, land beneath the sea is reclaimed, happiness and health, total literacy, that's page 320, 321. What about the economic structure? So here we go with this section here. This is very interesting. I'll try to conclude quickly here with the time I have. Maybe I can get this in 1 hour. On page 324, this whole section is good to read, friends. But page 324 says, the economy of the world healed. Mr. Armstrong says, since governments will be in the hands of the spiritual family of God, impartially administered by those human leaders directly under that great ruling family, and since there will be no human bureaus watching other human huge bureaus, which are suspiciously watching other bureaus, no military establishment, no intelligence or spy agencies or members of Interpol, no huge cartels, monopolies, unions, or giant government spending, the economy of the world will be healed. Think of it, no more foreign aid, none of the wasted billions to buy lovers, as he quotes some scriptures here, who turn and rend you later. No more strings attached government grants to industry, to science and space technology, to schools and institutions for research. Instead, every necessary industry, educational institution, and business will be in the sound financial condition. What a world that will be. See, that's what we look forward to, friends and brethren. Well, I see I'm out of time. Do take care, my friends. Until next time, I love you all.